Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cavs are back, and so are we. The NBA moratorium is over. Summer League is here. We get our debut of Evan Mobley in a Cleveland Cavaliers jersey, and we've got so much to talk about. We've got a lot of catching up to do. And with me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
It's going well, man. You're getting NPR Carter as we are recording after the game, and thus I got a sleepy baby. But things are good. We just got to finally see the Cavs play for the first time in a long time. Mm-hmm. The people we wanted to see do well looked really, really good, and it was a really fun experience.
Yeah, it was a really fun experience, and obviously Okoro and Mobley were going to be the two that got the most attention coming into this game, but what I was really looking forward to was seeing how other guys stepped up in this situation.
Are we leading the pod with Lamar Stevens?
We're going to lead the pod with Lamar Stevens and Broderick Thomas, because we got both ends of the spectrum there. I just wanted to touch on that, because that was one of my big things, because I knew Okoro, or I had a sense that Okoro was going to look good there. Mobley showed a lot of what we wanted to see, and we'll get to that very shortly. But man, Broderick Thomas did not give me what I want to see. But Lamar Stevens, man, he made a positive impression. What were your thoughts?
I mean, Lamar looked like an NBA player, you know, like, and that's really what you're looking for this kind of situation, where you really are just looking for the younger guys like Isaac, like Lamar, to look like they kind of are a different tier of player.
Yeah.
And that was definitely what I saw from Lamar tonight and from Isaac, who, you know, all you really want when you send a second year player to Summer League is to feel like, they probably don't need to be here.
Yeah. Isaac Okoro does not belong in Summer League. That was really apparent from the get-go. It was very good to see, though, because I needed a little infusion of Cavs. It's been a while since we've seen him play. Seeing Isaac go out there after, I guess, half an off season at this point, and kind of show off some of the work that he's put in, was really, really exciting. The handle looks better. Obviously, the physique has gotten a lot of attention in the pictures leading up to this game, but that translated early on. Had some really strong takes to the basket where guys were just not physically equipped to deal with them.
And that's going to be his game. You know, I think we learned that last year at the end of last season. I mean, that Suns game obviously is the one that really sticks out to you. But, like, you know, I think we realized that Isaac isn't going to be probably a guy who, like, I don't think he's got enough bend to be that crazy, you know, generate a 3 feet of space just off his handle. Like, I don't think that's him, but, like, what he can be is an absolute bulldog attacking and just driving right into someone's chest and just they're bouncing off of him. You know?
And Summer League is the venue for guys that can create off the dribble. I mean, there's so many teams, or every team basically, is playing with guys that haven't had a lot of experience together. There's guys going through the jitters, trying to feel things out, making their debut. And for Okoro, I thought he did really well handling the ball. Towards the end of the game, he was pressing a little bit. But that's where you want to see those mistakes. You want to see him at least get those reps in this opportunity, because it's not something he's going to be asked to do a lot in the NBA. And when he does, I would assume that he'd have a little more help around him. But just getting those opportunities to figure out what works, what doesn't work, and the fact that he had so much success despite not being one of those guys that really blows you away with his handle.
I mean, he had like three absolute freaking yam of dunks.
I really enjoyed that. After Jalen Green.
My word.
After Jalen Green, who was just incredible. So damn good. I thought Isaac had done such a great job on him in the first half. He basically only had that end one that was, I think, the only bucket he had on Okoro. But then in the second half, he had that step back in the corner over Isaac, which was nuts. Then he had that baseline jumper. And after that, Okoro just seemed fed up, went through his man and dunked all over Sengun, which was one of the highlights of the evening for sure.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'll tell you what. I mean, proof of concept for the G League, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, between Kuminga looking pretty damn solid, And now Green, like, it just looked like he'd played against NBA players before.
Yes.
And you know, even though Mobley was great and I saw a lot of good stuff out of him, like, you could just kind of tell that the level of competition, of course, like, it's a terrible environment for bigs, but man, did Jalen Green look comfortable out there. And I think he only had like 2 assists, maybe 3 assists, but the playmaking is pretty good too. I mean, Şengün like messed up like 4 or 5 easy dimes for him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and especially playing in this setting, your first debut, to only have 1 turnover, I thought was really impressive. 23 points, 2 assists, 9 of 18 shooting for Jalen Green, which was really good. The thing that also stood out for me with Okoro was the change in his jump shot. Mm-hmm. It does look a lot more compact. It looks a lot quicker. Release point is a little low, I find, but the fact that he's getting that shot off quicker, I think, is a really encouraging development. He took the 1 bailout 3 towards the end of the game, but outside of that, he was 2 of 5 on his other 3-point attempts. I like seeing him get those shots up. And the one thing that really stood out, though, and I mentioned Broderick Thomas not playing well, the absence of guard play for the Cavs was really, really apparent. They just... Broderick Thomas was not recognizing guys when they were cutting off ball. Jalen Hands wasn't doing that.
Jalen Hands played like a guy who used to be a top high school prospect, but has lost his shine. He was doing too much and not doing enough. It was the old Paul Rudd and forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah, he showed some flashes, but nothing that actually looks like it would translate to good team basketball.
Yeah, he did not have, the guard play was not there. So it was a tough spot to evaluate Mobley. But Justin, what are we doing? What kind of producing is this? We're 6 minutes in. We haven't talked about Mobley. Let's talk about Mobley.
Got to give the people what they want. Well, I was segueing to that because I think it's important to bring up how poor the guard play was. I mean, Isaac Okoro was probably the best passer out there with him on this roster. But one thing that I really liked with Mobley is so often when big men aren't getting good playmaking from the guard position, you can see them kind of lollygag, that they can get a little out of the game. And I like that he was really showing some aggressiveness. He was creating for himself in the first half. Yes, not a lot of those shots went down, but I did like that he was really kind of starting to force the issue and really try to create opportunities. I thought that was a really encouraging sign, because we want to see that aggressiveness from Evan Mobley. And like, the things that don't show up in the on the box score with Mobley were
that
jumping.
Dunk on Şengün was so good.
Oh man, there were so many things that just jumped off the screen with him that it, like I said before, it gave me the taste that I really needed from this team in summer league already after 1 game.
Yeah, I mean, super exciting from Mobley. The splash plays were so splashy, dunking on Şengün and then immediately just swallowing his shot. Şengün did get a foul drawn on him, and man, that guy's got some footwork. But yeah, you know, like those 2 splash plays were right there. I feel like with Mobley right now, like that game was like everything we've heard about him as a player, like was shown in micro in this game. Like, the feel was really good. I mean, he was running fast break, which is really cool and fun to watch.
Oh my god!
You're up more than once, and attacking in semi transition, like such a fluid athlete. Facing up with a head of steam, like when he has the destabilized defense to attack, which is great, because again, like, consider the fact that like we're not gonna see, you know, what he can really do in this setting. Because he doesn't have guards that are just like feeding him good looks and getting him the ball with an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So when he did have an advantage, we saw that. We saw when he didn't have an advantage, the handle was a little, he didn't have a lot of shake on the handle.
Yeah.
We saw the strength issues pop up. Kenyon Martin Jr. was kind of getting under him a little bit on some plays. But overall, like, man, he just looks really, really good. I mean, if I'm gonna put on my nitpick hat, I will say that the defense, he got gassed at the end of the game for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the defensive engagement drops when he's not a pass away, which is what I saw at USC when I was watching in my admittedly limited scout of him. And that's stuff that, like, you know, if I'm the Cavs coaching staff, I view this as such an opportunity to just like go watch Draymond Green possessions and watch how involved he is every second of every defensive play. And if you're going to, like, because, like, no matter how physically talented you are and how smart you are, like, you're never going to, like, be that defensive anchor and floor raiser unless you can, unless you're impacting plays that are happening, like, two passes away, you know, unless you're snuffing out stuff. And I think that's, like, when I watch young Evan Mobley, obviously we're going to, there's a lot of obvious stuff, you know, get stronger, get the jumper better, you know, work on these things. But when I see him, that's the one thing I go, oh man, this, if he really engages as a leader on defense, as opposed to being an elite talent on defense, then man, the Cavs are really going to have something here, especially with Jared Allen as his partner in the front court.
Yeah, as much as I was excited looking at what was on the court, I was getting excited about what's going to be on the court.
Because
when you're talking about him kind of falling asleep off ball at times, or when his man doesn't have the ball, that's one of those spots where I'm really, really grateful that it looks like Larry Nance Jr. is going to be back for this team, because he's such a great communicator out there, and you know that he's going to be in his ear all the time pointing things out. And the reputation on Evan Mobley is that he's just a complete student of the game, someone that picks things up very quickly. You tell him something,
I don't think he's ever had to be as engaged as I'm asking him to be.
Exactly.
On defense. And
exactly,
like, that's so, like, I hope that no one's taking this as me, like, you know, dogging the kid, because, like, I think it's most kids are like that, but, like, I just see the potential for him to just be a world destroyer on that end of the court.
No, I would be surprised if anyone thought that that's what you're doing with Mobley, because honestly, like, pointing out the areas for growth and whatnot, especially with a young team, is the best way that you can identify when that growth actually occurs. If you act like they're just a finished product right now, it's not going to be very interesting, and it's not going to be accurate either. But yeah, like, especially having, I love seeing Garland, Sexton, and Jared Allen on the sideline, courtside, rooting for these guys and whatnot. I was like, there must have been so many times where Garland was just wishing that he had laced them up and he was out there, like, finding Mobley off ball, because there were so many smart roles and times that he got into passing lanes where it just wasn't recognized. And when you don't have strong guard play, that's when you have to kind of rely on those post-ups, which was a really, really, like, that's where the strength issues really came up, was, all right, we need to force feed them because it's not working in the pick and roll. We don't have the guard play to do it. And sometimes those strength issues were starting to become apparent there.
Oh, can I tell you something I just loved about his game?
Mm-hmm.
Deep seals.
Oh, yeah.
That was a big, like, people, I think that people don't, that, not to do the, you know, it's not like, you know, rocket science here, but I feel like people who don't really understand big man play don't understand how important just running hard down the court and planting your ass right above the restricted area, like, what that means. Like, he drew a foul doing that, and Darius Garland is going to feast. Like the Cavs guards, including Sexton, by the way, like, their biggest weakness is passing in to out. But their interior passing is not bad. Even Colin. That's what Colin, if you had to say, what's Colin Sexton best at as a passer? It's interior passing.
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of plays, if they're pushing in transition and he's getting deep seals, they're going to draw fouls. They're going to get cheap buckets. And, like, this was a team that was pretty short on cheap buckets last year.
Yeah.
So I was very, very impressed by that part of his game for sure, even though, like, very rarely was it rewarded by, like, these summer league Cavs guards.
Yeah, and even when he did get the ball in some of those spots, like, he made some really great passes in tight, that big-to-big passing, which Jared Allen is going to finish where Cavangeli may not. The time he hit Stevens' back door and he just was not ready for that ball to come early in the game.
I couldn't quite tell. I was on my phone at that point because I had the baby still. It looked like Stevens just missed the catch, right? Like, that was a good pass.
Yeah, it hit
That's
him.
That's what I thought.
It hit him on the numbers, and he just mishandled it. Like, the fact that Evan Mobley had zero assists in that game is not reflective of his passing at all. I loved how natural he looked running the fast break. Like, when he's got the ball in his hands and he's moving, he doesn't look like a big man trying to, like, play on the perimeter. He looks like a perimeter player. And him finding Lamar Stevens on the fast break, who dumped it off to Okoro, I thought that was a really good team ball. He headmanned the ball full court pass to Broderick Thomas, who missed a shot. Like the passing. Oh, and the skip pass out of the double team was such a good read. Like the stuff that he does is so great. And I really think one of your smartest points was the fact that this isn't a situation like Luka being drafted to a bad team that doesn't have any young players to play alongside him, pretty much. Like, Evan Mobley is going to look better the more talent that's around him.
I just spent the whole time just like, can we get Darius a jersey?
Well, especially him sitting there courtside. I would love for him to lace it up just like, for a little
man,
bit.
Man, he just would look like, I just can't wait to see these two play together. I feel like they're just a match made in heaven of just, you know, really high IQ and playmaking to kind of supplement the play finishers on this team in Isaac, Colin, and Jarrett, you know? I don't need these guys to score a ton of points. I really don't. I just need them to move the offense and kind of raise the collective IQ of the team whenever they're out there. And I feel like that's what Evan's going to do.
Right. And I don't think anyone anticipates Mobley or Isaac Okoro to be high usage guys next season. But the fact that they play such good team basketball, like I think Mobley's probably going to get more touches than his usage rate is going to reflect just because he's such a good connecting piece. And you heard Kobe Altman talk about it during the game, but we anticipate using Evan Mobley as an offensive hub and having a dynamic scorer like Sexton, having Garland, who's going to be able to find him someone to play off of. That is all so important. And the other thing that really jumps out to me is just how important the acquisition of Ricky Rubio is, because early on, guard play is going to be a really important thing for Evan Mobley to have. And Rubio is someone, now that the trade is official and we know that he is part of the Cavs,
you know, Fran kind of hedged his question. Like he wasn't quite sure of the nature of the transaction to Kobe. Did you notice that?
I didn't really.
Where he was like, he said, like, assuming he plays for you guys in the fall. It's like, yeah, why wouldn't he?
Yeah, it was not in that awkward period where the reports are out, but the trade isn't finalized.
I think he got confused. It was just a funny little random thing. Also, but another funny thing is Kobe saying Kevin Kelly wants to show up for us and for the rest of the league.
Yeah. Well, he's not wrong.
Wrong. No, in the most literal sense, he is not wrong.
As the offseason is still ongoing, I think Kevin Kelly's non-guaranteed contract may come up in trade talks. It wouldn't surprise me. I thought he actually played pretty solid defense. He is the opposite.
He had a great offensive rebounding game, too.
He is funny because he's the opposite of a summer league guy, because he does not have any flashes in his game. He's just kind of in position. He's doing the right things, which is what you want for like a depth big 15th man type. But no, he is not going to give you the sexy flashes or anything along those lines. You derailed me though. Ricky Rubio, what he's going to bring to the table, I think, is so good, because you hear Devin Booker talk about him as a teammate, and Anthony Edwards really credited him a lot for his veteran leadership. And the fact that he's going to be able to be in Garland's ear, that he's going to be a stabilizing force on that second unit, I'd anticipate him playing like 25 minutes a night. Like, I really think that his impact on this team is a little underestimated at this point.
Well, listen, if you're going to have a starting lineup, and based on Jason Lloyd's report in The Athletic, it sure seems like the team is going to have a starting lineup of people who are 23 or younger.
The youths are going to be out there, it seems.
Yes, the youths. And if you're going to do that and you want to win games, which is pretty contradictory, I do think the org should look long and hard about their expectations if you're going to start that five, by the way. But with that said, if you're going to do that and you're trying to win, you better have a lot of good vets off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like in Rubio and Kevin and Larry, as you know, as it's currently constituted, like, you got three really, really good vets to kind of spell the kids when they're messing up, because that's what kids do, is they mess up all the time. So, you know, I obviously think the team needs a lot of help at the wing, but like, Rubio in the most specific sense is something that this team desperately needed. It's the reason the offense looked better for a stretch when Delly came back, even though Delly didn't have much left in the tank because it's like, oh, an adult in the room to organize things.
Yeah, and Rubio last season, he was like a lot of the international players where because of COVID, they really, like, everything was locked down. They came in a little out of shape. Him, Luka, all those guys, I'm going to categorize them in the same category and tier as Luka Doncic right now. But they were out of shape, and he played his way back into shape. He started shooting better as the year went on, and it's good enough. Like, his three-point shot is good enough that he's going to at least take the ones that he's supposed to. He had that 1 year in Phoenix where he shot 36%. He's had strong seasons, but he's been such an effective player with or without that, and having him as a stabilizing force, as a point-of-attack defender, someone that can run the pick and roll and get guys open and really help mentor the team, like, him and Larry, I think, are the two perfect vets. And the real question
What's
right
so
now,
funny, by the way, is Larry is like 27 years old.
Yeah, I know.
Like, he's old man Larry. Old, 28. He turned 28 in January. So, but point is, old man Larry Nance over here, he's like been in the league like 3 years.
Actually, speaking of ages, Isaac Okoro, I didn't realize he's only like 5 months older than Jalen Green and Mobley. Like, he's so damn young, and we got a really big moment from JJ Outlaw here, or I guess Isaac Okoro after the game. Did you see this, Carter?
No, I didn't.
Height Watch confirmed Isaac Okoro says he grew a little bit.
Oh my god,
he's a little bit taller. That's 6'6" listing, Carter.
He's a little bit taller. We know he's a baller, etc.
20-year-old Isaac Okoro still growing, baby.
Yeah, I mean, he looked really, really good. There's just no way around it. I wonder if they shot it down even earlier than we expect with him. The only thing with him is, like, I do think it helps Mobley to have, like, some extra talent on the floor.
Yeah.
Like, I know he's only supposed to play 2-3 games, and that sounds about right.
Yeah, I think Okoro is supposed to play the first two. So I think we see them both play on Wednesday. After that, like, I guess you kind of feel it out with Evan and see if he wants to play another game, but I wouldn't mind, like, as much as I want to see these guys play, like, hey, take it easy. Let's not have a Dylan Windler situation where summer league leads to injury and whatnot. And hey, like, just play it damn safe, because it is fun though to have summer league back after not having it last
totally.
Year. Especially because it's also a nice reminder that, hey, this is what they look like right after the draft, and a lot of guys, they get to work on their games further, they get to continue having strength and conditioning programs, like they are not finished products, and that's why I made a point of saying this is what Isaac Okoro looks like after basically half an off season. Like, he is still going to have some more time to improve on his game, and I don't know about you, but my excitement went up with Okoro because he's always been the one guy that I kind of need to see it before I buy in. Like, I don't have as much as kind of the blind faith as I have with guys like Garland. But man, seeing seeing him start to put it together and seeing him really capitalize on his body is a really encouraging sign, and especially the progress that it looks like he made on his jump shot.
Yeah, it looks like the jumper's better. It looks like the finishing is really strong. He looked really comfortable attacking the rim. Like, there was never a point last season, maybe at the very end, where it looked like he was really, like, in control of his drives. A lot of time it was, you know, like, he was putting all that English on the ball because he just had no angles.
Yeah.
And now he is
creating angles.
And that's, you know, it's funny, you know, bag Twitter will always, like, talk about how LeBron doesn't, like, have that. Like, I think it bothers people that LeBron doesn't just blow by people. It's like, when you're LeBron, you just hit them.
Yeah.
And they go flying. And, like, obviously Isaac isn't a physical specimen that LeBron is, but, like, the same principle applies here. Like, I think he should keep working on his handle, sure, but, like, I think that is where his game is going to lie, which, again, will restart the is he a two conversations. Because, you know, if smaller guys are guarding him, that style works a lot better.
Yeah. Right now, his offensive game does seem more suited to be a two, but hey, like, with the length that this team has. Like the concern,
and frankly, with the dearth of wings this team has, he's gonna be a three for them.
Right, exactly. It's not like we have concerns about him being a small forward defensively, which I think is where the biggest question is. So I do think getting him the reps as a ball handler when this team does project to be a pretty pick and roll heavy team, given the investment in Evan Mobley and Jared Allen now, I think that that's a really smart move. So it's just nice too to see, after we spoke with Mike Garrity about, hey, what are guys working on and whatnot, the fact that like the points of emphasis for Isaac Okoro was working on his handling and working on his jump shot, and the fact that we are now in the beginning of August and we can see that work already, we can already see the growth in those areas, I think is a really, really encouraging sign.
I couldn't agree more, man. He just looks, he looks really too good to be out there, you know, which is the best thing you could possibly say about the guy. Do you think Lamar is going to get burned on this team? Like, I feel kind of bad for him, because I feel like he's someone who could probably earn it, but just like the four position is such a logjam for them.
Yeah, I honestly don't see it. I think right now, looking at the way that this roster is constructed, like he's probably not going to play over Dean Wade, because what they need what Dean Wade brings more than what Stevens brings.
Totally.
And like he's not playing over Larry, obviously, as a reserve. If we're assuming that the five young guys, the young core is the one starting, I just don't see the minutes. I think it's going to be good for him to get some reps in Canton. It's great that the team is in town now, and he can take advantage of that. But the nice thing about Lamar Stevens is, if you do have injuries and you need him to play either at the four or maybe some minutes at the three, you know that he's going to be ready. You know what you're going to get from him. You know he's going to make an impact on the defensive end. I would really love to see more growth with that jump shot, because that would unlock minutes for him. Because if he gets that jumper on track where it's at least like low 30s, you can earn minutes on this team, because they just need wings that badly.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think that's his game, you know? Like, as much as I think Lamar has a chance to get his jumper to a serviceable spot, but he's not a wing. He's a four in the NBA, and it's a bummer, because I really do think he might be a legitimate end-of-bench kind of player, you know, that could get minutes and fill in a stopgap, especially defensively. I mean, he and Isaac, like when the Cavs looked their best tonight, it was him and Isaac and Evan just running in transition and just being physically imposing, which is a really fun paradigm for this team to be. Cause like, it feels like they haven't been able to be a physically imposing team for quite some time, you know?
No. and that's without Jared Allen being and that's there.
So, you know, it was definitely very, very fun. But I will say this, Broderick's got to look better than he did.
Yeah.
You know, like if he wants a roster spot and he wants to stick around, like that's a player who you would hope more from after a half year of legit NBA burn. Like, yeah, he was getting minutes.
Yeah, I'm hoping that he looks a little more composed. He was definitely pressing, and that's what stood out. Like he had tunnel vision, whereas with the Cavs, I felt like there were times where he was playing pretty good team basketball. He just needs to get back to that. You're like, that is the way that you're going to prove that you belong with this team, is not guard. What's that?
I just don't think he's a point guard. I don't think he's a two. So
yeah. No, I agree with that. Carter, it's been so long since we've talked. It's been killing me, but do you mind if I pull out the old soapbox? It's got a little bit of dust on it, but I want to stand on it for a minute.
Go ahead, gang.
All right. So in our time off, obviously, there was a lot of conversations. And one of the things that came up is this whole talk of young core. I've seen a lot of people get really upset that when people mention the five young guys for the Cavs as a young core, and they talk about how many of these guys are actually franchise guys and whatnot. Young core to me, and when we use it on this podcast, means that you are not moving one of those pieces unless it is to enhance the core, to be part of the core, that you're not going to sell off one of these five young guys for spare parts. I don't think they're going to do that with Okoro. I don't think they're going to do that with Garland, Sexton, Allen, or Mobley. Those are the young core. And yes, they're not all franchise players, but when I say core five and when I say young core, it's because those are the people whose development is being prioritized. That's what that means. PSA.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. This message was brought to you by Twitter, where someone clearly pissed Justin off.
Also came up in the Discord, and I just needed to get that off. I need to get that off my chest.
I hope that whoever the target of that that monologue was listened, and you feel seen.
I
that's really what matters to me, Justin.
You know what? Honestly, sometimes it's just for me. A lot of this we do for the audience.
It's the old Clooney thing, you know, one make one for you, make one for them.
Yeah. I got a little bit of airtime for myself, but we should probably move.
It.
We should probably
can we talk
move
free
on.
Agency?
I was going to say we should first address the fact that Jared Allen is back with the Cleveland Cavaliers on a 5-year deal.
Sure.
Because we have not podcasted since that became news.
Yeah, so 5 years, 100 mil is the reported terms. The also reported terms are that it's flat, just 20 mil across the board.
Yep.
Nothing wrong there. And, I mean, I think everyone knows what we're going to say about this because we've been saying it the whole time. Like, we're both fine with this deal, right? Like, yep. I'm more than happy with it.
Yeah, I think even the summer league game is a good example that Evan Mobley isn't a five yet. Like, he may be at some point, he might play some backup five. Who knows? Like, if Kevin Love is still on this roster, I would imagine Love to be the nominal backup five on this team, and Mobley plays those minutes with him. Like, there's a lot of ways for this to go, but I really do think that the fit between Allen and Mobley is going to be great. They're both so mobile, and I think it's worth exploring. Like, the acquisition of Jared Allen was one of the highlights of last season. He's a player that I've liked for a really long time, and I'm really happy that he's back.
He has a 7'6" wingspan. I'm just looking at him. Ooh. Did you know that? I just Googled, double checked his age because I wanted to check, and that popped up there. My word.
They should be a good defensive team next year.
You would think, even with Sexland's pretty public deficiencies there. Plus with Larry, you know, kind of bringing the veteran smarts next to Allen and Mobley, who, you know, aren't kind of defensive orchestrators yet, but just are so damn physically talented. I love the move. I mean, I've said it 100 times. I'll keep saying it. The case study here, if you're worried, is Clint Capella.
Yeah.
You know, Clint Capella is a couple years older. We thought he was just a glorified rim runner in a Ponzi scheme offense in Houston. And he got better. And just just like we talked about with Giannis, where when I had Ty on in the post-title pod, like Giannis didn't like add to his bag. You know, Giannis just got smarter and better at basketball because that's what older players do.
Right.
Like they read the seams, the gaps of the game much better. And like that's what you're expecting from Allen. I don't need him to add a jumper to be worth this contract. You know, like I just need him to be a good physical player that just gets better and better. I mean, Capella, you could argue, was the Hawks' second most important player last year.
Yeah.
Playing along a high flying power forward that rim runs, and they were able to find plenty of good looks on that offense.
The league is getting big, man. The league is getting big again.
And in fairness, like Collins is obviously, you know, a much better shooter than Evan is right now. So it's not an apples to apples, but the point is, one, do not treat Jared Allen like he is a finished product, even if he doesn't add a, you know, like one of those like very definable skills that he doesn't currently have. And two, he can play alongside Evan Mobley just fine.
Yeah.
And if they don't play along together just fine, I think that is much more an indictment on the Cavs than on those two players.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think the presence of shooting around those two is going to be really important. We saw Mobley's ability to get by guys off the dribble, and like that's going to be a great spot for him to create an advantage with Jaren Allen on the inside. Like once he gets by his man, Jaren Allen's man has to make a decision, and we know he can make that big-to-big passing. Allen makes some pretty good passes as well. They're both mobile, so I'm happy to have them both there. But I mean, we now touched on it is the importance of adding shooting around them. And obviously Isaac Okoro working on his jump shot is going to be an important part of that. But
Jetty's going to have to find his again.
Yeah. Well, assuming if he is back, then yes. But I'm
assuming Jetty's back until he's not.
Nah, that's fair. But I do think it's important that we need to figure out exactly who the eighth man is for this team, because we've got the core five. You got Rubio and Nance. They're probably the first two off the bench. If Love's back, I guess he's the eighth man. But whether it's eighth or ninth man, however you want to classify it, the Cavs do still have a deficiency at the wing. They need a veteran wing shooter.
Yeah, that's the thing. Love doesn't affect that one way or the other. It's whether Love is back or he's bought out, which, again, we don't really know what's going to happen. I mean, Lloyd's reported on some early expectations, but that's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if Love's back, it just means Larry's going to play more five or Kevin's going to play more five. It doesn't really affect the three position. I mean, Larry can play a little three and so can Dean Wade, but we all know that's not ideal. Ideally, what is ideal is if you can't make a move, and get someone you really like, that you just hope Jetty bounces back.
Right.
Because the thing is, I will say this for Jetty, and I want to get ahead of this one. He had a nightmare season last year. That is so far beyond his worst season. It's hard to fathom. Mm-hmm. So like it's not like we should necessarily just anticipate Jetty's going to be as bad as he was last year. He's been a helpful player for this team before.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't last year. We all know that. I'm sure he would tell you that.
Yeah.
The numbers plummeted. But if the jumper gets right, who's to say? So that would be ideal. But in terms of what the team should plan for, it doesn't feel great to be depending on Dylan or Jetty at the backup three right now, because Dylan's just had so many injury problems, and then Jetty is coming off the worst season of his career.
Mm-hmm.
So, what would you do? Because the Cavs are in a tough spot here. I think people will, if they start the season as currently constituted, people will go after Kobe for not finding a backup three, for trading Torian, for Rubio. Because I'll tell you what, I think the Cavs could have gotten a point guard for the full mid-level. You know, like, or, you know, part of it, you know, you could go get Howell Neto and or someone like that for cheap.
Mm-hmm.
and kept Prince. I'm still on board with getting Rubio just because I think the team needs a backup, a floor general more than anything else. But that will be the criticism. But like, now that we're here, I don't really know what to do if Josh Hart, who, by the way, isn't much of a shooter, isn't coming.
Mm-hmm. No, like, I think,
like, what do you think the fix is?
So that's a good question, because I think it comes to this free agency conversation where obviously the Cavs were not able to spend money on a shooter, at least not yet. I would still hope that you bring in someone like maybe a Svi Mihailuk or some other shooter.
He's on my list of people that the Cavs could take a flyer on.
But I'm not penciling that player in as the 8/9th man. I do think that at this point, I'm still waiting to see if they're going to be active in the trade market.
Well, let's talk about that real quick. Let's say they do sign, like, obviously Josh Hart is like probably the best prize on the wing market left. Mm-hmm. In terms of people you might actually spend on. What you're helping with if you sign a Svi is that whoever comes out of camp looking the best is your, you know, your second wing off the bench.
Yeah.
You know, the Isaac replacement. And I do think Isaac's going to play heavy minutes again, so you don't need that much time. But with that said, like, I think that's what you're doing. You're not signing a Svi Mikhailuk and say, hey, you're our backup three now. It's, hey, in camp, you, Jetty, and Dylan are going to compete for this, and whoever is the best is going to get it.
Yeah, I think if that's the way the offseason played out, I would still be a little disappointed. It's a tricky position to be in, because with the majority of the best wing options that we discussed, the Cavs were either priced out or they returned to contender. Some of them turned down more money. And it's a really bad negotiating position to be in when you're saying, hey, we can't offer you as much money, and we're probably not giving you a starting spot either. You're going to start behind a 20-year-old in Isaac Okoro, or potentially behind Colin Sexton as well, as a 22-year-old. That is not a good bargaining position, especially for a team coming off a 22-win season. The Josh Hart situation is interesting. So Chris Fedor has mentioned that by his reporting that they are engaged, at least, or gauging that market of what's there with Josh Hart. I think once the Josh Hart signing is completed, whether it is a sign and trade with the Cavs or another team or back with the Pelicans. My blind guess, or at least my hope, this is my hopeful heart talking, would be at that point, if the Cavs weren't able to capitalize on it, then they would look at the trade market for guys like Terrence Ross, Bogdanovich, Joe Ingles, all these other guys that have been mentioned. Because you look at the move that the Bucks just made, where they traded for Grayson Allen for a nothing player and two late seconds. The Cavs have Jetty Osman as a declining salary. They have the San Antonio Spurs and Houston Rockets second round picks next year, which are probably two of the bottom three teams in the Western Conference. Now, I wouldn't advocate for trading those picks just to trade them, because they're probably going to be valuable, and we've seen what high second round picks can do next year in the draft or whatnot. You also have your own first round pick. I would be looking out there for that kind of an upgrade, where you are flipping some of those picks to get a more established wing, whether it is someone like a Terrence Ross. And I feel like Josh Hart might be the domino that situation needs to resolve before you can go on to plan B, C, D, whatever the case may be. But even if you're signing a Svi Mihailuk or whoever the shooter, free agent shooter may be, I think that the replacement needs to come by trade. And that's a difficult position to be in. It's the position the Cavs have been in the last couple of years, where they haven't had the free agent spending power that you might want to upgrade this roster. But it's also something that they've done well in. I remember last year, people were freaking out that after Tristan Thompson walked, that, hey, there was no good centers on the market at all. And we got JaVale McGee, who is a perfect backup center, along with two second-round picks. Ricky Rubio is a better backup point guard than basically anyone that was on the market. That was a big way to address a need. And I'm not going to panic until free agency is over and we know what the training camp roster is, but I would be disappointed if they did not trade or find a way to acquire a veteran wing, at least personally.
I'm just not there in terms of, because like I don't think this team is really that ready to win yet, you know? So it's like, do I really want to give up any assets for Joe Ingles, like, that are meaningful? Like, maybe you do, but like if it's like, hey, we didn't want to give up 2 seconds to get a guy who's going to be here 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's hard for me.
Someone like Terrence Ross would be interesting to me with 2 years on his deal.
Someone who's a little younger that you could kind of say, like, is going to be a kind of a piece maybe you can build into the kind of the future. Like, maybe, but like, I don't know, man. It's just hard for me to like get too worked up about it, because I just feel like this team just isn't there yet. Like, they need more seasoning. Now, the reason you like it is for the reason we talked about earlier, which is if you're going to have 5 23-year-olds or younger in the starting lineup, your bench should be veteran heavy. And, you know, adding Joe Ingles to that bench, someone like that.
Which, I mean, is the thing.
That's as ideal as it gets.
They may not be ready. Like, I don't really anticipate, looking at the way that the Eastern Conference is shaken out, like, there are a lot of teams that got better. I think in the East, the only teams that didn't get, or the only teams that got worse, is basically Boston, Toronto, maybe Indiana, but they're getting TJ Warren back, so you don't know what's going to happen there. At the very least, they stayed the same and they upgraded their coaching staff. But there's a whole bunch of teams with names ahead of them. Chicago Bulls made a lot of moves. I don't know if I'd pick Chicago to make it out of the first round in the next 5 years, but they sure spent a lot of money to get to it.
Terrible.
The nice
what
thing.
What a terrible offseason. I cannot believe anyone likes that offseason for them.
Well, I mean, let's see if it gets any worse with the league investigating the Lonzo Ball sign and trade.
When is the Lonzo? I don't know, man. It's just, whatever. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Your former home is causing you some grief here?
It's just like I just think that team is so aggressively mediocre.
It's true.
And like, DeRozan's old.
They in Miami spent a lot of money to have a second round ceiling, maybe at best.
So like, as much as I want to slander Miami spent a lot of money to have a conference final ceiling at best. Like, I think they can get there if things break.
I don't know
if it is possible, if everything goes awesome for Chicago, for them to make a conference finals.
Well, the messy thing for Chicago too.
And they gave up all their first rounders. Like, ugh.
The messy thing for Chicago, too, is Zach LaVine now has this Team USA experience where I think if he wasn't playing with all these awesome guys on Team USA, maybe Chicago's offseason would excite him more. But now that he's actually got a taste of winning and he has the option to taste free agency, it'll be really interesting to see if what the Bulls did this year is going to be enough for him. But the nice thing about the play-in tournament is it does give you another goal. Right, like you may not make the postseason, but I do think getting that 9-10 at the very least is a realistic goal for the Cavs.
And if they don't, I think people should be frustrated.
Right, and
I'll be frustrated. I'll say that. Like I mean, the more negative folks on Twitter as of late. Like I got in an argument with Jobs the other day, and he was like, you know, at some point they need to win. I'm like,
kind of getting at here with the need to trade for a wing is, yeah, maybe the young guys aren't ready, but you need to put them in the best position possible to test that.
I'm being sold.
Yeah, you need to put the right pieces around them so that it's okay. Yeah, they struggled here, but you know they were kicking it out to Dylan Windler, who wasn't fully healthy. What do you expect? If that's Terrence Ross and you're giving those guys the right veterans to cycle in, because if it's Rubio, Nance, and let's say Ross or Josh Hart or any of these other guys, those are legitimate guys that you can mix in with the young players that's going to help accentuate what they bring to the table. And that's why I really want to see that. That's my big hope, is that they can bring in a veteran wing, because I do think it solves a lot of things. And honestly, if they want to be competitive next year, getting some value from Kevin Love on the basketball court coming off the bench would be nice. I don't know if it's necessarily a prerequisite, and we'll see how that situation plays out. But you want to put these young guys in a position to succeed, because, yes, the teams ahead of them have more names, but these guys need to turn themselves into names. Isaac Okoro, Garland, Sexton, Allen, Mobley, like, they have the opportunity to take that step forward and overachieve in a lot of people's eyes and become household names. And I think that should really be the goal of this season, because I don't think you bring in Ricky Rubio if you're not looking to try to be more competitive. And yes, there are teams that have made some bigger moves ahead of them, but there's always a team that disappoints. There's always a team that overachieves. Nobody would have had the New York Knicks as a 5 seed last.
And how about in a different note with a much younger team, is no one would have thought the Hornets were going to be as competent as they were, especially with as much time as LaMelo missed last year.
Even the Hawks, who had basically the same record. And yes, Bogdanović helped. Yes, Gallinari helped. But a lot of that came internally. It also came from the presence of Clint Capela having a full year, which is what's going to happen with Jared Allen. Like, I do think that the Cavs, and I tweeted this out, going up until the end of May, the Cavs had the 21st best defense in the league. And that was with significant injuries, all the contacts, a healthier season, having a full year of Jared Allen, having Evan Mobley, having a better Isaac Okoro, all of that, having Ricky Rubio off the bench instead of Damian Dotson and Broderick Thomas. All of that is probably going to make this a pretty good defense. I think it's realistic to expect them to at least be league average, especially with a good defensive coach and JB Bickerstaff. That's going to keep you in a lot of games, and that's going to give these young guys a lot of opportunities in close games. I just hope that the right veterans are in place to let those guys really work through those opportunities and hopefully capitalize on them.
Yeah, it's I think I've been sold, Justin.
Yes!
I do think that you got to support these guys. And I will say this, for anyone bellyaching about Josh Hart's shooting, I get it, okay? Like, this team needs shooting. It was a sore spot last season. But really what they need is good basketball players.
Yeah, and like, he's certainly that. Like, he's
like replacing last year's version of Jetty with this year's version of Josh Hart is a hilariously big jump.
Right, and for his career, it's not bad. Like, it's 35%
like 34,
for his
35.
35% like, for his career, and I still assume that every player is going to get an uptick in shooting when they come to the Cavs, so that's on my mind as well. But again, that's probably a bit of a tough sell, right? Like, I'm not anticipating Josh Hart because,
no.
I mean, he's probably going to want to start wherever he goes.
And frankly, if I think if it was happening, it probably would have happened by now.
Yeah, it might be a pretty good guess. I mean, we are in the guesswork business. we try to not go too far in hypotheticals, but probably a good guess. But whether it be Terrence Ross, whether it be other wing options, Chris Fedor had tweeted out a pretty interesting list of guys that he thought could be potential targets. I do think that they have really good trade assets if they want to use them. Now, the tricky part about not having cap space and needing to rely on this avenue is somebody has to be willing to move their guy. That opportunity has to be there. And those are forces that are outside of your control.
But those are opportunities, Kobe. Take as many qualms as you might have with Kobe. I mean, I think this is a pretty pro Kobe Altman podcast thus far in his tenure. But even if you don't love him, he's been pretty good at vulturing into these deals where something else is happening and he just lands with Jared Allen.
Yeah.
I
have maybe a sliver of free agency angst just because they missed out on a lot of these guys, but they were priced out. Like I said, no one's taking a pay cut to come to Cleveland to be a reserve. It's not going to happen. So I'm hopeful. I'm going to wait for the offseason to play out and see what happens. It would be great if it came internally. Yes, Dylan Windler may be an option. He had that great month and he had a bad month for the Cavs, and then he had no months for the Cavs after that. That'd be great. It'd be nice if Jetty Osmond played like he did in 1920. It'd be great if Kevin Love played like he did in 1920. There's a whole lot of things that could go well. But I just want insurance for that. I want to go up. In a perfect world, you want to add a veteran wing, another adult in the locker room, because they're sorely going to need those, and just a more reliable option. Let's raise the floor a little bit to give these guys a puncher's chance in the East.
I hear you, man. I totally hear you.
Well, I take my wins when I can get them, and it looks like I got a win with this one, winning you over. How about that?
Congratulations. It won't happen again.
The middle class in the East did get a lot better. I have to say that.
It did, but not in a meaningful way. You know what I mean? It's been a weird offseason where only the Lakers maybe affected their championship ceiling, and we can talk about that later. But everyone else, it was a lot of just deck chairs moving around, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're not mistaken.
If meaningful means affecting who wins the title, I don't think a lot of moves have affected who wins the title this summer.
No, we just have a healthier middle class in the NBA right now, which, you know what? A healthy middle class is always a great thing. But you know what else is always a great thing? Podcasting with you, buddy. It's good to be back.
I missed you. It's hard going down to one a week.
It is hard going down to one a week. I think not podcasting during the moratorium was probably a good idea. We don't want to cost this Cavs team any draft picks or anything like that. We don't want to be the Miami Heat or the Chicago Bulls going down an investigation, as great as that content would be.
No, I mean, I think that would be a great thing for us.
not a great thing for the partnership.
From a storytelling perspective. About we'll be 50 years old talking about how we cost the Cavs $50,000 or something. It's probably always better to play it safe.
Probably for the best. We are fully in off season mode. I'm still pretty dang excited. I'm glad that Summer League is here. We'll get at least one more taste of Mobley and Okoro together on Wednesday, it seems like. So we will obviously be talking about that. But we're probably in one podcast a week mode until training camp gets going. So if breaking news happens, you can always expect an emergency podcast, but we'll probably be down to one a week, at least for the regular scheduled show. Anything else you want to add before I wrap this thing up, Carter?
I like this Cavs team. I like that we have seven guys that I'm pretty sure can help us win. At the least, maybe eight. If Kevin's around. So I feel pretty good about this roster. Even if they're not quite ready to win, I think they're ready to show us the kind of stuff that we want to see culturally. So I'm feeling good. And if they add Josh Hart, I'm because I like Josh Hart.
I do too.
I like his game a lot. I think he makes a lot of winning plays. The jumper isn't always there, but he makes a lot of winning plays.
That would be a pleasant surprise. But I'm definitely interested to see what other moves will be done to supplement the team, because it does seem like, hey, they still do have money to spend. They're not going to end the season with empty spots on the coaching bench. They're not going to end the offseason with empty spots on the roster. There's still moves to be made. I'm just happy. I love the core. I'm glad that this core is going to get a shot to at least be competitive in the East, and we'll see how things go. It probably would shock nobody to know that I'm pretty dang high on the young guys and how they're going to play. But thank you so much to all our listeners for tuning in. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure that you like and subscribe. It's the best way to help the podcast show up in the feeds. If you're listening on podcasts, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.